Welcome.
Well, hello. Welcome to Taking It Down, the weekly pop culture discussion podcast brought to you by the website, The Alabama Take. Subscribe to us so that you don't miss an episode, and a reminder that those episodes are out every Tuesday. Three big announcements here before we get started. Our September 29th show will tackle listener questions on pop culture, so get those into us. You can email us at thealabamatake@gmail.com or simply send us a message on social media, a DM, if you will. Second, our October 27th show will be our first book club episode, and we'll be covering the new novel, The Only Good Indians, by Stephen Graham Jones. Lastly, over the course of many contract back and forths, we've now signed Idiot Man exclusively to the Alabama Take. This is big news. This is fresh off the wire here. Visit the site, read I Guess We Are Doing the Thing, which covers the insanity of the college football season. As for our podcast today, we're talking about two movies. Just two movies, no shows. Maybe we'll talk about some shows, I don't know. But primarily, we'll be discussing the new Netflix release, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, from writer and director Charlie Kaufman, and the 2019 film Blow the Man Down, which was an Amazon Studios release directed by Bridget Savage Cole and Danielle Crudy. Let's get the other two folks involved here. Let's bring on our fearless leader, Mr. Blaine Duncan. Blaine, how you doing?
Hey, man, you did such a good job of that. That's going to be your new thing.
God, that's stressful.
He really does have the voice for it.
It was measured perfect. It got all the information. Yeah.
I spent a lot of time thinking about that, making sure I needed to got my enunciation in. You know, some of us are marble-mouthed Southerners. Donovan, let's get our third in. Donovan, weighing in from far north of the Mason-Dixon. How much snow is on the ground?
We're having a beautiful fall day here, everyone. The high is about 61. The leaves are turning.
Already?
Oh, yeah, it's great. We got a little yellow. They're like peak color up in Vermont. But we got a little red, some yellows. I just bit into a freshly picked apple.
Gosh, you're like right out of a Washington Irving short story.
I tell you what, I truly feel that I am.
It sounds great. We've finally gotten some good weather going here. It's not all bad. Kind of to go on the idiot man thing there, talking about college football. Cruel that Alabama did not play Georgia this weekend with
the perfect
football weather. But hey, that's okay.
We hope it'll only get better with the weather and the football and stuff. So you did mention in the intro, in 3 weeks, our September 29th show is going to feature a segment where we will answer questions from people. So get us some questions to answer at thealabamatake@gmail.com or any social media account. And yeah, you did mention.
The strike zone there is King of the Hill. I would love some King of the Hill.
Please.
Rank every episode. Give me something. Come on.
I have a feeling our wives are going to play a big role in some of these questions.
Probably so.
Like a big role in ignoring them. and us.
That's already been happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We do have Idiot Man signed, and talk about the contract negotiations for that.
Involved.
It was very involved, very time consuming, but we do have Brian Olio's persona Idiot Man on there. That's going to be a lot of fun in the weeks to come as he talks about a lot about football, but he'll also throw some videos up on that based on those things.
Got to think that our old friend COVID is going to be pretty heavy.
Let's talk about COVID. This is where people come to get their COVID news.
I'm just hoping, you know, this is pure speculation on my part, but I'm hoping that I'm seeing COVID riding straight for ACC headquarters, because it is like thin broth subsisting on ACC football. I wish they'd stop playing right now. Like, I've been watching it, but I'm not happy about it.
You'd rather not eat than try to eat that.
Like, come on, guys, just get a little COVID in there. Not the players, the people in charge.
It reminds me of my drinking days when I would on Sunday I'd open the fridge. If there was one beer, I would not even bother.
Yeah.
What the fuck's the point? That's how I feel about college football right now. If you turn on and there's like two ACC games, I'm not bothering. I turn the TV right off.
I'm not watching that crap.
You missed a barn burner between Tulane and Navy yesterday if you didn't watch it. Navy nailed a field goal right as time expired to win it. This is the Navy that was trounced 55-3 by Baylor. So good on them.
I wouldn't say I missed it.
To quote. I gotta say, I'm surprised. I don't know, in the history of the friendships represented here, trying to guess that Donovan would have watched more college football than probably me and Blaine combined. It seems to be.
And I watched the Browns Bengals game Thursday because Browns Bengals is stupid Christmas. Like, you get excited for it, you're like, oh, something dumb's gonna happen. And you know what? It did.
It's pretty
good. What was it?
There were a lot of bad, well, for one thing, the entire offensive line forgot how to block for Joe Burrow. For another thing, that game had the best call that I have ever heard, where Baker Mayfield got nailed for intentional grounding, and he's like, you know, next to the ref, you know, throwing his arms, doing the LeBron thing, right? Like, how could it be? And the guy's call switches to intentional grounding. There was no receiver downfield, and the quarterback was out of the pocket. Or something like that. Like, it's directly at Baker Mayfield.
Just condescending,
huh? Great.
I love it.
Then the Browns fans fought.
And that's classic news?
It is during COVID. So I guess that's what I saw COVID doing this week. Egging on Browns fans to hit each other.
Big news, guys, beyond football. I watched two movies these last two nights.
A 48-hour double feature. I'm so proud. I'm going to try to remember what happens in Charlie Kaufman's film, his last film.
That sounds very ominous. You know something about COVID and Kaufman?
Before we get there, I want to talk the story of two trailers this week. Was the Mandalorian trailer dropped? Did you guys, I think you both watched the first season. Am I correct?
You are correct.
That? I did not finish it. That's kind of where I landed program.
That's huge news. Tell me.
It just didn't hook me. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that the excitement that was brewing online on just as far as chatter goes for the Mandalorian trailer, I was very shrug emoji about and didn't even think, well, I'll watch it when I'll watch it. I didn't scour the internet to try to find it.
Is that because Werner Herzog's character's dead? Because that was a disappointment to me.
I mean, that's a disappointment, but you know, that show, I watched it, you know, it was released on Fridays, and I watched it every Friday night with a purpose. You know, every Friday night, 7:30, boom, I was in front of the TV watching it. But at the same time, when the series was over, it didn't leave a lot of, it didn't feel like it had a lot of meat on the bones.
Ooh, I feel like, you know, I feel like you just summed up something I feel about, like, a lot of streaming shows I watch. I don't know what it is, but it's just like season one of something, and I'll finish and be like, yeah, that was entertaining, but I didn't love it. For me, Mandalorian season one needed a step up in its writing. There were some really weak episodes, and I think it was based on the writing. But I am willing to see what season two is going to do. You know, it's only 30 minutes long. It's a really low investment.
That's so true and such a boon for the show. I think I'll attribute my disinterest after its ending. Like, I was interested, you know, for those 8 weeks or whatever. I think my disinterest waned after the fact because it wasn't serialized. It was much more episodic. And to me, that they wanted to kind of serialize the last couple episodes. And it's something about that. And I don't mean to criticize shows that are episodic or procedural because those are fantastic. And have been proven over and over to be entertaining and well-made and good. I, you know, you take any good sitcom and they're pretty much that way. But this needed a little bit more of a thread running through it rather than an adventure of the week that we sometimes got. And I think that caused me to end up thinking, well, it was okay and I'm glad I watched it, but I don't care when it comes back on. Now, when it comes back on, I'll probably be buckled into the chair Friday night once again.
What kind of chair are you watching television?
Yeah, I have some questions.
Yeah.
So that you don't, like, fly into the TV?
So I don't fly out of the room in a rage, I guess. All right, but what about Fargo trailer? Now, Donovan, you have already mentioned on this show that you're pretty excited for the new Fargo. It's supposed to come out in March, but, you know, COVID. And now it's going to come out, I think, like in this week or next week. I need to check. It's like September 27th, so I guess next week. Yeah, that's pretty soon.
I can't wait.
I'm pumped. What about you?
Can't wait. Chris Rock, I'm hoping for good stuff from him. It's got Jason Schwartzman in it. Got a whole bunch of other folks. A lot of people, I don't think, loved the third season. I thought it was doing a lot.
I thought
it was doing a lot of really cool, really interesting things. And part of my...
And that was the season with Ewan McGregor and David Tewis, right?
Which I thought he was fantastic. You know, Vaga.
He was so despicable. I don't know that I've ever hated a TV character more in the last 10 years or so, you know, as a grown-up. I wanted him to die every week.
Yeah, you know, it had Nikki Swango in it. I thought she was great. Ray Wise as maybe God, who knows. It was great. Like, there was just a weirdness to it that I liked.
Season 3 was a little too weird, for me and others.
I felt
like...
My reception of that was colored by a piece that the TV critic Emily Vanderwerf wrote, where she kind of looked at how she thought that season 3 was fitting into kind of some themes and stuff that were emerging from all of Fargo. So I'd encourage folks to look at that. It might make you like it a little more. And then season 2 is straight up one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen. Season 1 was fun, but season 2 was just amazing. So I have high hopes for season 4.
Season 1 and 2 are fantastic. Fantastic. 3 is going to be, I think, hit or miss depending on who you are. But 4 looks good, and I'm glad that Chris Rock's going to be doing, I guess, the lead role even for him. Yeah. That's going to be fun. All right. Speaking of odd and quirky and big things, we're going to talk about...
Excited since March.
You've been for Fargo. Fargo, yes, yeah. You stepped all over my segue there.
It feels like it's been since March since we were ready to discuss
that's
this.
Because I hate you, Blaine, and I hate your segues.
They're horrible. I really have to work on them. Is there a segue school I could roll and roll?
Spelled differently, probably so.
So we got Charlie Kaufman's newest film. This on Netflix. It's on Netflix right now. It's called I'm Thinking of Ending Things. Just in general, do you guys have a relationship with Charlie Kaufman's work?
Yeah. I mean, some of those movies are definitely, I mean, Donovan and I were college roommates, and some of those are like staples of, you know, watching around that time, or were for me, like Eternal Sunshine being John Malkovich. Things that he was involved with. And then I remember we either went to see or got our hands on Synecdoche, New York.
I think we got our hands
and watched that. I definitely, you know that you're in Charlie Kaufman's world when you approach something, you know, like you're like, oh, of course he was involved in fill in the blank or had influence on this. It's like, it's a very specific thing. And all of those movies kind of sit in the same place in my mind as Synecdoche, New York, and I'm Thinking of Ending Things being two that I was more grateful to have watched than actually enjoyed watching, if that makes sense.
I think I'm right there I think I'm right there with you. Synecdoche, New York gave me OCD.
Yeah, yeah. But it was brilliant.
I've never seen that one, and I avoided it even because around that time period, a lot of people were talking about it, and it was a lot of people I hated. So
you hate Roger Ebert?
I avoided it. A lot of people that I guess I encountered in day-to-day life.
You encountered Roger Ebert in your day-to-day life?
What's he doing in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah. What was he like?
But I do recall watching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and really liking it as well as... But his other works for me seem to keep me coldly at arm's distance from what I think I was supposed to be feeling. So
even being John Malkovich?
Yeah, even that one.
I do think
to me that's the effect it had.
Eternal Sunshine is still the one to me that is as emotionally affecting as intellectually. I'm not sure that he has hit both those marks in the other work. I mean, to varying degrees, I guess. He'll always make you think, but how much he's making you feel outside of feeling odd, I'm not sure. That was like my overwhelming, immediate, like visceral reaction to this new one was, this is weird. I like it, but it's weird.
Well, I think some of the emotional resonance from Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind comes from the director. If you follow him into the Showtime show Kidding, that's really in his wheelhouse. So that show Kidding's got its quirks, but it's so much more emotionally resonant, I guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
So let's get into I'm Thinking of Ending Things, and we'll... I'll set it up, and then that way, if someone hasn't seen it, let's give you the setup, and then because you can't talk about it without spoiling it.
I'm excited to hear what you say is happening in this movie.
Well, I mean, here's the pre-spoiler rundown. It's about a young man who's taking his girlfriend to meet his parents for the first time out on their farm in a very snowy evening. It's got Jesse Plemons as the guy Jake and Jesse Buckley, the Irish actress, as his girlfriend. She's along for the ride, and the parents are played by two greats, Toni Collette and David Thewlis, which we just mentioned from Fargo, and that's all I can tell you. That's it. Now, from this point forward, spoilers. So unless you've seen it, I would suggest coming back to our segment here. So it's what would you say? Trippy, odd, quirky?
It starts out quirky.
Yeah, it does.
And then goes, I think, Donovan, you made kind of a Fargo reference that I guess they're in northern Oklahoma.
They're in Oklahoma somewhere, yeah.
Snowing like crazy, immediately encounter kind of the brutality of both the natural world in terms of where they're driving. It's very, something bad could happen. Pretty stark landscape. And then he takes her around that kind of the farmhouse, and you learn the brutality there, and it's just like, this is weird, but familiar weird, and then it goes trippy.
It felt like the only thing that separated this from a horror film is that at the horror film, it would be like, at the end of a horror film, they'd be like, oh, and they were trying to give the demon a body, or, you know, like, really. Mm-hmm.
The horror film will be less frightening.
Yeah, like.
Yeah, I honestly thought it was going to head into horror film territory. I'll say this, for the first 20 minutes, the quirky part, I suppose, it was definitely operating on a wavelength I've been on of late, like this idea of life or the end of life or the end of things as in general. That's just, in the parlance of our times, to me, that movie, that first act was a big move. It really was. I was like, I'm down with this.
Well, did you feel... Because I feel like the rest of the movie kind of flows into that and just dread and horror.
No, it does,
and,
yeah.
In the increasing, for want of a better name, let's call her Lucy, you know, with Lucy kind of being like, mm-hmm. something is not adding up here. And like the part, you know, she constantly goes reaching for parts of herself that aren't there, which mm-hmm. is terrifying. And then I'm not quite, I feel like I'm jumping around. Not quite sure if the ending nailed it for me, but for most of it, just the mood of the movie won me over. I think I might have jumped too much there, but I can't feel like I can't talk about any part of this movie except as part of a whole. And yet there are so many individually great scenes.
There are, especially once the parents get involved, just the strength of the acting on display there. And that had to be like a pretty fun, an easy sell. It's like, oh, you get to play all of these different archetypal parents, you know, like the ones at the end of life that he's kind of taking care of, the quirky middle age. Just that would have been a fun job, I guess, if you're one of these actors. I thought they did such a good job, and they kept the strangeness so, like, the tension was very high, right? Like, as you're starting to notice. Like, it took me a few scenes to realize, oh, her clothes keep changing.
Right.
You know, and like, as you start figuring that out, the tension is just like right where it should be based on those performances of just like, this is odd.
And plus the movie uses the bars on the side of the on the side of the screen.
Yeah, and shot in 4:3, right?
Yeah,
so shot presentation.
And I'm not so sure that those bars didn't squeeze in a little. There were times when I looked at, I was watching it, and I'm almost certain that it moved in like a centimeter.
And it led to some great framing, reframing. Like there's one shot where it goes from the dinner table to, I think they actually use this for a movie poster, but it's so perfect, right? Where they get her and she's in between the two windows that are dark, and then you just have the dark bars next to the windows. And it's an absolutely perfect moment from, I forget the name of the cinematographer. He did Cold War, which came out 2 years ago.
Well, it was a black and white film that won Best Foreign Picture, right?
Lucas Jal, he's Polish. And I thought his work was astounding. Man, he's only 39. What am I doing with my life? I thought his work was astounding, especially for a movie that in kind of a lot of ways isn't super dynamic. Like there's a lot of folks just sitting in the car, right? And there's a lot, right, just sitting around the dinner table. But the camera work makes it feel really, kinetic's not the right word. It doesn't feel dull either. Like it feels like there's a reason to watch. Part of that too is just the absolute knockout job that Jesse Plemons and the woman who plays Lucy, who I had never seen in anything before, did.
Jesse Buckley's her name.
I guess she's an Irish actor, and I thought she was phenomenal.
Yeah, she's really good. She had to do some reaction stuff that would not be normal. You'd have to dig to figure out what kind of reaction you'd have in these situations.
Yeah. Like to a dog freaking out?
Hey, that dog is fine.
Lynching a dog.
I want to come back to the dog issue because I'll bring it up now. To me, that was the most Lynchian thing I'd seen since watching a David Lynch film. When the dog couldn't stop shaking or wouldn't stop shaking its water off of its back.
I actually found the shots with like the car's headlight in the night very Lynchian. Do you remember sort of the, I don't remember if it's episode 8 or whatever, of Twin Peaks, right? The one that's all black and white and and there's a lot of, before the men from the other place come, like there's a lot of that like low shot over the ground. It felt like super Lynchian too, with like its setting, like a farmhouse. And
I couldn't help but think that the whole thing owes a bit of a debt to The Return, right? That season of Twin Peaks. I don't know. Maybe it's just that they're operating on similar levels, but you know, we're talking about similarities. I mean, the whole thing felt like it could happen in the Black Lodge. You know, like it felt very,
I'm not sure that it did
of a piece with it. And even it could have. I wasn't expecting it to be quite that surreal. Like I'm used to his mind trick kind of stuff that he does. But I mean, this him being Kaufman, this went a lot more surrealist, I guess.
And I guess we're all on the same page as far as what was actually happening for the most part, right? That the character that Jesse Plemons was playing, who was named Jake, was imagining all the different scenarios of bringing a possible girl home, but he was doing it later in life as a janitor who didn't have a girlfriend or a wife.
Right. That's established in the book, I think, a bit more than...
Okay. I wasn't 100%. I have not read the book. And that's kind of what, but also there were a couple things that like I probably would have made more sense if I'd realized they were referenced to something. Like I've never seen A Beautiful Mind. So I did not get that the end was a Beautiful Mind.
Right.
I did know.
You've never seen A Beautiful Mind? What is going on?
I've never seen it.
How have you never seen that? Yeah, but that amalgamation of his, all the media that he's taken in and the, you know, early on, there's that long bit about musicals, and
he's just... he lists like 20.
Yeah.
I'm not really that into musical theater.
Just the patchwork that he has created. I don't know. I guess the question that I took away from it is, what is... I guess it's just all in his head, right? Is there supposed to be somehow someone's consciousness has also gotten trapped in there? They introduced that possibility when the ice cream girl is trying to warn her, right?
Like, you don't have to go on. Stay here.
Yeah. What are we supposed to make of that?
I mean, and it does kind of seem like Lucy is, right? Like, she's aware on some level that she's not real, maybe? I mean, not exactly, but, like, she seems a little resistant to being an imagining, a fantasy. Maybe resistant isn't the right word. I kept kind of...
Does that mean that he's created a character with enough... Is it, like, a comment on the act of creation,
right,
in a way that now... I don't know.
I was kind of thinking... What really got me thinking, too, is because it's kind of scary and horrifying, but does it... And sometimes I think this is where Charlie Kaufman and other filmmakers of his ilk get me, and I kind of wonder, like, if none of this is real, do I care? If that makes any sense. Like, these are pretty things that there's tension and horror and dread that kind of come through the movie, but I also think, you know, a lot of horror comes from, not all of it, but some of it comes from, like, the empathy of, ooh, that's a real person, and I would hate, you know, real people, you know, even when we're talking about things like Twin Peaks, The Return, I think that there's sort of a suspension of disbelief enough to be like, you know, Cooper is real in a certain sense, in that he's not real, but, like, he's a good dude, and we can kind of recognize things in him. So if by the end of this movie, is it sort of just like a puzzle to figure out, and it's not really, you know, does any of it really matter?
Mm-hmm.
Do we care?
Well, I think to me it spoke on the could have been aspect of life. What could have been, and how that can be dangerous and claustrophobic and not safe for someone to live in their mind in such a way, of all the could have beens, all the instances that you could have had, in this case, a girlfriend there while you were tending to your dying mother, or you could have had a girlfriend who was a physicist or a painter.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that the girl happened to look the same each time. I think that's what it said to me. That was my interpretation. You know, what would have been the best possible outcome for me if I was in control and could dictate what the other person was doing for my life. And I think that's why we get the song from Oklahoma at the end with the whole Nobel Prize thing. It looked like he was winning something like that. So that's like the ultimate, where I've got an audience cheering for me and I've won one of the grandest prizes in the world. And that's ends up being maybe dangerous, or maybe just wistful, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, it seems like he dies, right? Like, maybe he does.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of confirmed, too, that he's dead in that snowbound automobile vehicle at the end, last shot.
So that part was, you know, that was, and I 100% agree with what you said, Blaine. This is more just me being, like, interested in my own emotional reaction to things, right? Like I'm so curious with my own reaction to, like, Lucy, not because I'm really interested in Lucy as a character, and then kind of finding out that it's not, I mean, it is her story, but it's not really her story. It's really all about the gene,
right?
I'm kind of puzzled, which I guess Charlie Kaufman's probably pleased I'm spending this much time being puzzled over his movie, but I'm kind of puzzled with myself trying to figure out, how do I feel about that? And I don't know. I have a lot. Anyway, I think this movie bears rewatching. I'm sure I'll find different things the next time I watch it. But that's been something I've really been trying to puzzle through. Where does it work?
There's a lot that, you know, her being warned, like I mentioned, or her calling herself all the time. Like, what, there seems to be more going on that we're supposed to, or maybe those are all just like kind of red herrings of, that don't mean anything, that are, we really are just totally in his head, because everything else you can kind of point to something in, if we're taking the scenes of him at the school as the old man janitor, as like the capital R reality in the movie world, then you kind of can see like all of the signifiers, like you see some of the young girls pop up again working at the ice cream place, or in the crowd at the end, or and so, But where does she come from?
Yeah.
I guess that's the question.
Wait, you're asking where the who we're calling Lucy comes from?
Yeah.
Well, I think, isn't it referenced that the reality, like you said, the capital R reality, is that she waited on him at a table and he never had the balls to, you know, go any further and say, hey, here's my number, we should whatever. Isn't that alluded to?
I mean, there's a couple different stories about it.
About them meeting at the trivia night?
Yeah.
No, that seemed to be one of the fictional tales he was going to use with his parents to see how it went.
Because I was thinking that the thing about him waiting, you know, them waiting on the table, like maybe he was getting it mixed up with the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it may not have even, you know, I feel like, I don't know, like maybe he pulled her together out of a lot of...
This movie had a ton of references, allusions. Did any stand out to you and kind of helped you get a scene or understand a scene or moment more clearly?
There were a few that kind of puzzled me more because I wasn't able to... Like the reference when they're driving after leaving the parents' house and he starts talking about... What film are they talking about?
Woman Under the Influence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I just totally...
Cassavetes.
I whiffed on that one.
That one, actually, because I saw the Pauline Kael, and then she did a Pauline Kael impression, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what's going on. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have gotten that one. But it did kind of make sense.
I missed the impression.
It's when she does the like, mid-Atlantic accent, and she's, like, smoking the cigarette, right? In the car. It's really funny.
Oh.
It made me laugh.
Okay.
And she's critiquing... Woman Under the Influence, and it's a Pauline Kael review, which, not that I have that memorized or anything, I was just like, oh, okay, I saw the Pauline Kael book, and now she's doing the middle, this is Pauline Kael. which that sort of started to make things make more sense to me, because you started to see these things, like, you started to see these things in his room, right? And, like, you saw the dog, the urn, the ashes. So it was kind of like,
right.
Oh, okay, I get it. Like a lot of things that we're getting references to are in the room, and you can kind of tease that, right? Because the book of poems is in the room.
Mm-hmm. A Beautiful Mind is in there, supposedly.
Yeah, I guess. Is that true? Okay, I did not see that.
It's in the movie somewhere, and I think it was in his room.
Okay.
That would be interesting to rewatch that scene, kind of knowing where things are going, because I mean, you're still trying to figure out, like, more obvious, I guess, misdirections, like what's in the basement, that kind of stuff. What is in the basement? The super ominous stuff, like why are there scratch marks on the stairs or on the...
Well, we know from Lovecraft Country what's in the basement.
Yeah, we do.
This just reminded me of something. Did it feel at all to you like this movie was also operating on, not really, but kind of like the level of the Gothic, where you have like the house, it sort of doesn't make sense. You have the...
Oh, for sure.
Right. The basement is where the secrets are, but you also, you know, it maybe a little American Gothic.
Very. Something with the farm and the husband and wife kind of just out there. The
frozen lambs. You know? The maggot pigs.
Yeah.
But I got this overwhelming sense of the Gothic, especially in the house. Although I would hesitate to say that this is a Gothic film.
Right. I got that same sense as well. To me, when I was seeing this film as a weird, quirky, odd film that wasn't going to be very straightforward, I at first thought we were encountering a Slaughterhouse Five kind of thing, where he was unstuck in time and he could understand that he was going to be a janitor in the future, and he could understand that his girlfriend was going to the farm with him, and it's like those two areas of his mind were coalesced, or even more areas that he had lived through, but we were only getting those two shots. That's not what I thought at first, especially when it showed the old hand turn on the radio, and then there was such a great edit where it was the young Jake, his hand was messing with the radio at the same moment.
Yep.
Yeah, it did seem like he was trying to, maybe they were going to, if he can undo something in the past, or, you know.
I think you're not 100% wrong there, Blaine. I mean, maybe not on a literal level,
maybe,
but symbolically.
Right. Brie Larson was originally to have the role of the girlfriend, but her Marvel films got in the way.
Dang, so, she would have been excellent in that.
That's what I think too.
I don't know. I mean, Brie Larson's a very good actor, but I didn't know that until I saw it in the show notes, and I'm having trouble picturing that. I really liked Jesse Buckley. I really thought she was fantastic, and whatever, and maybe this is put down to good directing too, but Jesse Plemons and she just seemed to really click with all of their scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Kaufman directed this one. I mentioned this earlier. To me, Kaufman films miss when they don't have a strong enough sense of melancholy or ache. And this one was a little spotty up until the end with that final shot of the car in the snow. And I think that kind of wrapped it up for me to be one of Kaufman's films that I do like. You know, he's hit or miss at times for me personally, but
last shot was great. I do agree that the, like what was being said, if we've gotten to some version of what the attempt was in our discussion today, like there's reason for that to be, that should be melancholy. That should be ache. It was placed in that landscape, but it all felt a bit distanced emotionally the whole time. Not that his previous works aren't as well, but I'm kind of with you that it could have been like an A movie and it didn't quite hit the mark in that way, like have quite that resonance.
I think the dance was supposed to fill in to color in the emotional part of the movie. Like this is how it would have went down had everything actually been perfect. If we did meet, if we did get married, if we were, you know, young.
It's been a really long time since I've seen Oklahoma. That's from the dream sequence in Oklahoma, right?
I do think so.
See, I feel like that would have landed a little more if I like musical theater a little more.
Yeah, I didn't expect my lack of musical theater knowledge or desire to have knowledge to really bite me in the ass on this one.
I've been called to the floor.
We should have learned our lesson with Watchmen, guys.
We should have.
Hey, I do have one quick question before we jump into our break. Were your wives involved with watching this?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And what did they think?
Beth liked it, but she likes Charlie Kaufman's films.
Yeah. Okay. Same with Natalie.
I will make two quick comments that Kelly, right before we started it, I said, I'm going to watch this movie. Do you want to watch it? I'm going to watch it to discuss for the podcast. And she said, there are no aliens involved, right? And I said, no. I think it's much less, you know, silly than that. And then when he starts singing at his little Nobel Prize, perhaps, award, she gets up and she goes, I'm done.
Just a few minutes left.
Yeah, well, she didn't know. She didn't know that.
Keep an open mind, Kelly. I'm sorry.
Well, it had already felt like 6 hours at that point. Yeah,
it's a pretty long movie, and it does feel long.
It feels long.
And I think
long.
It's supposed to.
I mean, it kind of feels like sometimes, and I'm cribbing this from a review I read, but I don't remember who it is, so I'm sorry because I read probably 3 or 4 after this. Somebody said it feels like a car ride, right? The car ride is perfect because the whole thing feels like a car ride. We're never getting there. I thought, what a great way. That's such a great way to put it.
Yeah, that's how I thought about it too. Mm-hmm. So that's good. All right. So yeah, that's I'm Thinking of Ending Things. We did enjoy that, or certainly enjoyed talking about it. No ads here, except for the one we do to help run things. If you are willing to help with the cost of the show or the cost of the website, head over to buymeacoffee.com/thealabamatake, all one word. And you can make a donation of any amount. We'll use that to keep the site and the podcast coming at you. Also, don't forget, we'll be doing a segment on the September 29th show where we'll answer your pop culture questions, or even questions beyond that, maybe. So get them to us by email if you'd like, by sending those to thealabamatake@gmail.com, or just check out The Alabama Take on various social media platforms and message us there as well. And you'll want to be a part of our first Taking It Down book club for October 27th show. We'll dissect The Only Good Indians by Stephen Graham Jones. Share us, let others know we exist. Many thanks to those who listen, especially those of you who listen with regularity. We will get back into the show.
Can I shout out a new listener?
Do it, man, yes.
So thanks to Ashley for listening. Ashley up in Connecticut has shared some kind words. One of my friends up here in Connecticut has shared some kind words about the show. So we're officially north of the Mason-Dixon now, you guys.
Ashley from Easter Cove, Maine.
Yeah.
Do not cross her.
Yeah, that's right. We're actually referencing the 2019 movie Blow the Man Down. That's on that was an Amazon Studios movie, and it is on Amazon. If you have Prime, you're able to see it. The breakdown of this movie is Priscilla and Mary Beth. These are young girls, maybe in their 20s. Their mother has died in the opening shot. You get this. And they're responsible for the house that they all have lived in, and they're very likely to lose. That evening of the funeral, Mary Beth runs out on a cold night, another snowy night, guys, and meets with this quite the ne'er-do-well, Gorski, and she ends up having to defend herself. Let's leave it at that, and we'll kind of keep it spoiler-free. If that sounds interesting to you, it's a 90-minute movie on Amazon. I think we're all giving it a thumbs up, and we're going to dissect it with spoilers, so if you haven't seen it, duck out now and come back and listen to us later. Guys, let's go around. I'm supposing we all liked it. Adam, you recommended that we watch it, or you said it was a good movie, and I said, yeah, let's use it for a segment on the podcast. So you liked it, right?
I thought it was excellent. I thought it was a good, we kind of jokingly in the group text talked about the weeknight watch, that 90-minute film that does a good job but doesn't take, you know, I don't want to watch a Charlie Kaufman movie on a Tuesday night, you know, but this was perfect, and it really hit a lot harder than I was expecting. I clicked on it thinking, oh, Maine, it'll be pretty to look at if nothing else, and yeah, maybe like some good indie movie kind of story threads going on. I thought it was really strong. Two thumbs up for me.
And you're not like me. It doesn't sound like I'll sit down on Wednesday at 7 p.m. and fire up Schindler's List. just some loose.
I'll say I know that we had the Morrow movie marathon joke when during COVID, but
hey, look, can we fire up that music right now?
Yeah, there you go.
There it is. Beautiful.
But, you know, we kind of got in the habit of saying, what do we want to watch tonight? Let's watch a movie. And then trying to kind of seek these types of films out. And this was a good one.
Donovan, what'd you think?
Oh, I liked it. I did like it. It was one of those, I liked it. So this movie, for me, it was, I liked it. I didn't love it. But it's these folks' first movie. So it left me saying, okay, I want to know more of what's going on. And I think I would have liked it more if they're kind of, I hesitate to call the B plot, because you really realize that it's central to the film. But the B plot kind of overwhelmed the A plot. And I'm like, I want to know what's going on with the old ladies.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think I had a similar response. The bed and breakfast / whorehouse plot. I really like the actress's name, and I'm going to fail to mention it correctly. She was also recently in Perry Mason and Glow, but she played one of the ladies who works, one of the young ladies who works at the bed and breakfast / secret whorehouse.
Not so secret.
Not so secret, as it turns out. But she, her story didn't interest me. I think if they could have found less time for her, then I really would have liked this movie. But I did like it.
I can get almost all of my complaints out of the way early, so we can just talk about what we all like. I really only have one. I'm not sure if the Greek chorus 100% worked, although it was fun.
And, yeah, I'm the same way.
And sometimes they had some very odd camera choices where they were just zooming, where they would zoom in on a character, usually following them, and be very shaky. Okay, I got all that out of the way.
Both this movie and I'm Thinking of Ending Things did a lot with panning.
Yes, they did. Yes, it did.
And to me, the reason why they did it in Blow the Man Down was to show the vastness of a small community.
Yes.
And the vastness of the network that was going on to keep this bed and breakfast going.
Can we just talk about how there was one clear standout star MVP of this movie, and it could only be the one and only Margot Martindale?
Yeah. Without her, the movie falters.
Every single scene where she kind of goes between this, like, grand dame to stormy drunk to, oh man, I just wanted to, you know, it made me miss Granny in The American.
I made a mental note that no one can wield menace and caring and drunkenness all at once like Margot Martindale. And she did that in The Americans. You're exactly right. She didn't have a big role up until 25-minute mark.
Yeah, she definitely stayed in the shadows. And you kind of, like, the little blurb that I read was two young women run up against the kind of the seedy underside of their town and the town matriarch. And I was like, well, when's she going to show up? she shows up and delivers flowers, right? She doesn't come to the funeral. She just drops the flowers off the night of, which is a good, like, first glimpse and kind of, like you were talking about, of this caring, almost nurturing figure, but also existing only at night, you know, and that doesn't come when, like, the upstanding citizens are there, that kind of thing. And then that shot of her at the bed and breakfast, where you think you've been charmed by this small town, aside from the whole, you know, murder thing so far. Now, this is an idyllic little place, and they flip to her working at her desk with just the sounds of the whorehouse going above her. That was great.
Which you don't know is a whorehouse at the moment.
No, you think that something's about to... Something's about to go down.
I thought that there was a scene which kind of... Maybe thesis of the film is a little too strong. Mm-hmm. But they had a theme which almost perfectly... A scene which I thought was hilarious. And they nearly perfectly encapsulated the thesis of the film when the three other ladies who are also kind of running the town are, you know, sitting eating muffins in the kitchen and really talking about serious stuff. And then when someone's husband comes in, you know, oh, I dropped my fork, and he has to get a new fork. And how are the Patriots doing? They're not giving Brady any protection. He just goes and toddles off.
No protection.
It was perfect encapsulation of sort of who might really be running the town.
And it's great. Funny too, to look back on stuff like their early interaction with the cops, when it just appears they're out for, like, their morning exercise walk, you know, and they're kind of like, you know, there's the old women walking by kind of doing their little flirty thing or whatever, having fun. Like, no, they're really in charge.
They're collecting information is what they're actually doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great simple movie that it's not a simple movie. It's a great simple statement that women are behind things and actually much more important than the men are in most cases. It worked, and you're talking about a thesis that kind of, it worked to do that kind of in a feminist way of expressing that idea.
Yeah,
because right, none of them, you know, they're not wearing the badges and they're not running the docks and all these kind of official positions where these, you know, the guy running the docks, I immediately thought of, like, The Wire season 2. Is that what's going on here? Like, are they cracking eggs into their beer? That kind of thing. And he kind of has this pose of, I run the world. And then the kind of buffoon cop, the Wiggum of the situation, you know, when they go to the whorehouse, he's kind of saying, like, oh, I love it here. All those kind of things, and the young guys. Mm-hmm. So just totally.
Yeah,
they're all the men are shown to just be buffoons.
Yeah, and even the young cop who might kind of be in the hero role, he doesn't kind of get to be the hero, right? He doesn't get to. He figures it out, but he can't do it.
Right.
They're really building it up. I think that his impotence to do anything, I think, was maybe the point, right? Like, he has all the pieces, and it just doesn't matter.
Yeah,
it's kind of the opposite of, I guess, an inversion of what would usually go down or what we come to expect.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, he wasn't a complete fool. He just didn't have the opportunity to do much about it. And it was interesting that his character you know, the big reveal maybe, and it was such a soft, cushiony reveal, was that he was the son of one of these ladies who's been running a whorehouse all these years.
Yep.
But he didn't know anything about it either. So yeah, I felt like this was a really good movie. I thought that it had a nice, strong, simple thesis, but well done. And it would, what I really liked about it is that it would reveal a card, you know, in its deck every 10 minutes or so. You got a little something new and you thought, oh, wait, this goes back to so-and-so. And
mm-hmm.
It's another one that I think I might have to watch again because I'm not sure I got everything correct. Quick shout out to Sophie Lowe. You know, we talked about Margot Martindale, but I do think that young lady who played the older sister, Sophie Lowe is her name, the actress.
She was great.
She was good.
I thought that she, I look forward to see her. Yeah, I look forward to seeing her and more because she really owned the scene she was in, and she had that slight flirtation with the young cop that could have in other movies would have gone completely differently.
Yeah, and they're slow. Once you realize that the whole thing is their initiation into that, I guess you would say, sorority of women running the town.
Mm-hmm.
Conspiracy
of women running the town.
Yeah, that's it.
For it to start with more or less with them sitting around the kitchen and the girls kind of just dismissing them as like, you don't even know that those women are going to be consequential. You just think, oh, here are these, the people who show up at a funeral. You know what I mean? I want to get back to my real life of trying to save this house and this business and getting the hell out of here. I don't know. I love a story that it was kind of tidy. It was, mm-hmm. you know, everything kind of had a callback. It was really about character development. I thought it was great. And
I think what Adam just said probably identified why I did like this movie. It is the surprise of figuring out that they played totally fair. Everyone was there. It's just, they just subverted your expectations in a real good way. And if I'd gone to see this, you know, there's, I think sometimes with streaming movies, maybe we have a little bit less invested. Mm-hmm. I'd gone and paid my whatever and bought my popcorn in a movie theater and walked out of this movie, I do not think I would have felt cheated, which is, I think, about as strong as an endorsement I can give for a streaming movie.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good one.
There's a lot of beautiful shots. Good cinematography.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. The strength of this movie was, to me, encapsulated in the older ladies having to share with the young girls that they had to create this whorehouse because they were getting hurt and abused, and it was their daughters that could possibly be raped or harmed many years ago. So they had to come up with this idea of giving the place for these dock workers or these sailors or whomever, these fishermen, to come in and not hurt them and give them a place to blow off steam and taking control and using your own body in a way that says, I own this. And when you think of it, when I thought of it like that, it fits so perfectly with the title. Blow the Man Down was, it's of course, fishing song. But, mm-hmm. you know, there's a little of sexual there in that title, Blow the Man Down, and which I couldn't get away from before I started watching it, you know, just the title. But then I heard it in song form and I knew it was a old fisherman song. And then at the end of the movie, or by the end of the movie, I realized that's got a lot to do with just stop the men and just get rid of the men or push them off to the side. Go give them something to do so they won't hurt us or yep. or bother us. You know, what's the Patriots up to? Go watch them. Leave yep. us alone.
Yeah. Or get your pie, right? Like, here's the pie that we foisted. You know, I just loved how they were treating the sheriff. He was so immediately so pliant.
Yeah.
It was almost, we talked about Twin Peaks with our Kaufman discussion. It had like indeed. A bit of like that strange small town kind of.
Yes.
Like, how was all this strange stuff? How was One-Eyed Jack's staying open mm-hmm. just across the border in the town of Twin Peaks?
This is all pointing to us doing a rewatch of Twin Peaks: The Return, right? Ooh.
I guess we have to. We got to at least do a David Lynch episode because
maybe so. Well, that's it for this episode. Speaking of spooky and weird, don't forget our book club. We'll discuss The Only Good Indians on October 27th. So read along with us if you want. Subscribe to us. Tell us what you think. Leave us a review. Share us with your friends. We'd love to hear from you. And get those questions for us submitted before September 27th, because on September 29th, that show will be, there'll be at least one segment of questions. But anyway, we'll be back next Tuesday for you with more pop culture ideas. See you then.